Hello, and welcome to Who the F is Corey Slater podcast, Game of Thrones edition, season 7, episode 3. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can rate, subscribe, review on iTunes, Google Play, and what's the other one? Stitcher. Yeah, Stitcher. You can get it on those three, or you can listen on my website, www.coryslater.com, K-O-R-Y-S-L-A-T-E-R.com. But yeah, dude, this episode was everything I hoped and dreamed for. There was so much dialogue. This is such a dialogue heavy. I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have almost 8 pages of notes. I think last week I had like 3, but. There's just so much, like, people are going to say not a lot happened in this episode, whatever. You finally had Jon Snow and Tyrion having scenes together, and then you finally had Jon Snow and Dany having scenes together. Like, such a good episode. But starting to break it down. First, we see Dragonstone, Tyrion and Jon Snow reuniting. It was totally adorable. They're like, oh, I remember the last time I saw you, you were pissing off the wall. And John was like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. They're a little dwarf, whatever. But yeah, the beach scene where John has to hand over his weapons. He's like, oh God, you're just like the wildlings, but you're Dothraki. Like, I'll whoop your ass like I'll whoop a wildling's ass. But he voluntarily gives all over his shit. Then they meet Missandei. Yeah. And then Jon Snow's face when he sees the fucking dragons. Like, there is probably like a good 5 times where I laughed out loud during this episode just from like people's facial reactions and stuff like that. But, yeah. But Jon's face when he sees the dragons for the first time, he's like, what the fuck? I mean, it's funny because, like, he's seen the White Walkers and shit, so he knows, like, this supernatural stuff is out there, but I guess seeing an animal of that size in the air fly 10 feet over his head, maybe, like, oh, God. Oh, wait, here, I'm rewatching it on mute as I'm recording this for the 4th time. But, yeah, the goddamn dragon flies, like, 10 feet over his head. And, yeah, just a funny scene, I think. But Melisandre, she's up there on the cliffs hiding, and we get another omen, another death omen. So we have Cersei's, which has said she's going to be killed by somebody younger than her, a young queen or something more beautiful than her. But now we actually have confirmation of another death omen for 2 of the characters, with Melisandre and Varys. How Varys was like, I don't think you should come back here. And Melisandre is like, I'm going to come back, and it's going to be for my death, and you're going to be dying here too. So we will see a couple characters' deaths now that we have omens for them. So we know Varys and Melisandre are going to die, whether it's at before or after the thing, but oh God, Jon's face. God, so many good facial reactions. So many good facial reactions. Just, like, there's such good acting in this episode, which, like, I know bitched a lot about fucking stupid-ass Euron last episode, and I think that's going to be the weak point this season, is the battle scenes, which we're going to talk about the Unsullied when they get to Castle Rock later on in the episode, but yes, I think the weak point of this at this point in the series are just going to be these battle scenes and, like, who's fighting in them. Because Euron's a laughable character. Jaime's got one damn hand. They show Bronn in this episode, but I don't think he's had a speaking... I don't think he's had a line this season. Yeah, this is the first time we're seeing Bronn this season. So, yes, but... And this is funny. This is one thing that I really loved is the yin and the yang of this first meeting between Jon Snow and Daenerys Stormborn. Targaryen, whatever. But Dany has this long-ass fucking title, and then it's Davos's turn. He's like, this is Jon Snow. He's king in the north. It's just so simple. It just shows the dichotomy between the like royal elite who put all this value in like fucking names and stuff. And then you got Jon Snow over here. He's a humble motherfucker and just does what he thinks is right. And you actually see it play out. Well, I'll get to it. But Jon Snow is just, he's a great chess player. Obviously, just growing up, he's got a battle mind, and like he pretty much knows immediately why Dany hasn't attacked King's Landing, because he knows that'll kill thousands of innocent people. But the way Tyrion, the way they wrote Tyrion, this was exactly how I imagined when Jon Snow did meet Dany, with Tyrion kind of as the intermediary. This is exactly how I imagined it. Jon Snow pretty much breaks it down when he starts talking about the White Walkers. You'll be ruling over a graveyard if we don't defeat the Night King. Jon Snow, his speech is simple and direct. Like he's pretty much like the epitome of the blue collar worker in Westeros. Dany pontificates, and then after that, Davos steps in, and this is where Davos, he's so simple and he doesn't have a formal education, but when he starts, he would make a great litigator. Like, he would make a great lawyer, because he's got a lawyerly mind. He does the yin and the yang kind of thing with the two resume speeches, where he gives Dany's resume and he gives Jon Snow's resume, where you don't believe him. I understand that. It sounds like nonsense. But if destiny has brought Daenerys Targaryen back to our shores, it has also made Jon Snow king in the north. You're the first to bring Dothraki to Westeros. He is the first to make allies of Wildlings and Northmen. He was named Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He was named king in the north. Not because of his birthright. He has no birthright. He's a damn bastard. All those hard sons of bitches chose them as their leader because they believe in him. All those things you don't believe in. He faced those things. He fought those things for the good of his people. He risked his life for his people. He took a knife in the heart for his people. He gave his own, and then Jon Snow gives him the stare. He's like, what the fuck, bro? You're giving away all my secrets. And I really feel uncomfortable right now giving you my resume when she should just take me at my word. But it's so funny how Jon Snow doesn't want to talk about his accomplishments or what he has done. He wants to get things done. And this is one of the things I love later on when there's just a scene between Dany and Jon Snow, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But I love this scene so much, just because Dany, she's so front-loaded with her title, and then she gives almost her resume really quickly, her victimhood, how she rose, and her triumph. Whereas Jon Snow, he had this really simple, basic introduction for himself, and then Davos steps in and he's like, here's this motherfucker's resume. And meanwhile, Jon Snow's face the entire time, he's like, God, just, I know this is what I've done, and I know you're kind of winning the argument right now, but you could tell from Jon Snow's face that he feels uncomfortable when people are talking about his accomplishments. Humble motherfucker. Blue collar as shit. I think that's why I like Jon Snow so much, just because he's blue collar as shit. Well, that type of mentality and doing the right thing. But, next, the scene ends when Varys comes into the throne room with more bad news. And then it goes into pretty much telling them that the Ironborn caught up with Yara and Theon and the Sand Snakes and Illyria, or whatever the hell, Illyria, caught up with them. Pretty much their fleet's destroyed except for two or three ships that got away. And then they show weak-ass Reek being pulled out of the fucking ocean. So many of these characters are, living in, living hells. For instance, Ironborn is being, nothing but hard men. And, living off that reputation of being a hard man. And Theon, they saw him as this little northerly prince dude because he was raised by the Starks in the north. So he didn't have respect when he came back to the Iron Island. He tries to get respect by being an Ironborn. That fucks up. Gets captured. Gets his dick cut off. Gets tortured. Becomes Reek. Redeems himself. Has flashbacks of being Reek. Like, has a total relapse, almost. And he's pretty much living in hell. He's living in hell. Yeah, so after they show Theon, like, I'm surprised they only gave him a 30-second scene in the whole TV show. This whole episode. Just to say that, oh, yeah, he did get pulled out by the remaining Ironborn or whatever. But, yeah, so we're going to have Theon coming back. I can't wait to see Theon and Jon Snow. Did Jon Snow see Theon? No, Theon left. Yes, Theon left after Brienne caught up with Sansa, and then Sansa and Brienne went up to the wall. Yes, that's right. So Jon Snow has yet to see Theon. So I'm really fucking excited to see what Jon Snow does when he sees Theon, who was raised with him like a brother with him and Rob. And, like, yeah, I really can't wait to see that reaction when those two characters meet up on screen. Hopefully we'll see that. But, I was really, like, it seems like the people of King's Landing are just, there's no character. That's one of the reasons I liked Rome so much, is because it not only showed you the ruling elite in the city, like Julius Caesar, Mark Antony, but it showed you those ruling elite, but then they would go and show you the normal people that lived within the city. In King's Landing, we don't have that. We only have Cersei. So when the Sand Sisters and Yara are being paraded through the city up to the keep, the common folk are just throwing shit at her. I'm like, the common folk at this point, like, you blew up half the goddamn city. The common folk know that. Why the fuck would they still be, like, so vindictive? Like, if you're the common people at this point, I'd be like, who gives a flying fuck? Like, our lives suck. But they still have the characters of just, like, mob mentality rule almost, which, I don't know, you kind of think they're idiots. Which, another thing, Dragonstone completely abandoned? Come on, that doesn't make any sense. There'd still be commoners. Apparently, Davos's wife, what the fuck happened to Davos's wife? He left her back in Dragonstone. And now he comes back, and none of the people from Dragonstone are there anymore. What the fuck? So they just, like, completely wiped out the population of Dragonstone, even, like, the commoners that would, like, live in the little villages around the place. Which is one thing I'm like, they're fucking with the population and the numbers so much in this series. It's fucking absurd at this point, where they're just, like, making up numbers all willy-nilly. Whatever. Like, Castle Rock, like, you have this huge fortress. Where are all the commoners at? Like, you don't see the commoners thrown in, or, like, the Unsullied didn't have to deal with any commoners that were within the city walls. I don't know. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, so when they're walking through the city, Euron, I do gotta say, Euron's got some good one-liners, and, like, the way that he's continually sticking it to Jaime, it's pretty fucking funny. But, like, he's imitating Theon as he's pulling, like, Yara's leash, and he's like, he's imitating Theon. Oh, no, what a twat. I love when British people swear. It's so fucking funny. So Euron takes his prizes up to the throne room. The goddamn mountain. Those helmets, those Lannister helmets look so fucking stupid. And then on top of that, when the mountain wears one, he looks like a goddamn boss from... like a Super Mario's game. like, he just looks so stupid with that helmet on. But I guess it's supposed to be intimidating, but whatever. They look kind of like, I don't know, Vader ripoffs almost, maybe, how it kind of comes down and flares out, but you really just look like a goddamn mushroom. But yeah, Euron says, I brought you the one thing that nobody else could do for you. I brought you justice for your murdered daughter. So going forward, Cersei pretty much says, Euron, you're gonna lead the Navy. Jaime's going to lead my army. But Euron has the love of the people. And he pretty much talks trash again to Jaime. He's like, oh, you've never had that, have you? And then he's like, yeah, do you think you can give me some advice later on? Like, does Cersei like a gentle rough, a finger in the bum? And to see fucking Jaime's face when Euron is saying that, like, you must. Oh my god, it's so fucking funny. But yeah, so Euron, once again, schooling Jaime when they come face to face. And next we come to Illyria Sand finally getting her punishment. I do gotta say this, the lipstick color annoyed the living shit out of me that Cersei was wearing, because it was so fucking distracting. Like, I don't know if it's that, like, pink pale color that they decided to use, but I don't know, the way that it looked on her complexion with, like, the blonde hair, like, it just, I think, like, a red probably would have been, like, or, like, a lighter red. Not, it didn't even have to be a darker red, but, like, that pink color was so, like, distracting for some reason. And I know they were trying to do it to, like, draw attention to her lips, but, yeah, I don't know. They could have chose a better color, I think, or better shade. I know it's something stupid, but, like, just with how dark that scene was, like, and then had to have that muted pink, it was, like, I don't know, there should have been more contrast, I guess. Cersei is a legit fucking sociopath. she stays up at night. Not like Arya, who does her mantra and then goes to sleep. She just stays up at night and just thinks about ways to murder her enemies, looking at the canopy on the top of her fucking bed, which is fucking hilarious, because it just shows how much of a sociopath she is. But it's so fitting for Illyria to be chained up right across from her daughter. I didn't even catch her daughter's name. Wait, it doesn't matter. It's like trash characters, because they were treated like shit. By not only the showrunners, well, I gotta say the showrunners on this end, because in the books they treat Dorne with like a little bit more goddamn respect. But yeah, but it's fitting that Cersei then gives her that death kiss, and "Mama" is her final word. So you know that "Mama" is just gonna be replaying in Illyria's head like the rest of her life. Like, it's so fucked up. She gives her that kiss with a long farewell. And pretty much Cersei says, you will live to watch your daughter rot. And it's like, Jesus Christ, that's aggressive. I mean, we got the mountain having a goddamn sex slave with that septum from last season at the end of the season. What was her name? Septon, what's her nuts? The one that fucked with Cersei. But Jesus Christ, man, Cersei is one vindictive fucking asshole. But yeah. And then after that scene, Cersei's so goddamn hot and bothered by just, I guess she has like a kill boner. She has like a kill boner right now. She just essentially murdered somebody, just got this great revenge, and she's like, it's time for a sexy time. So Jaime gets some blowjob action. Good for that guy. I wonder if she's ever given him a blowjob. He's probably like, where the fuck is this coming from? Especially since he lost his hand and she doesn't think that he's a full man anymore. But what she's doing right now, she's a legit sociopath. She's fucking using him, which I'll get into later. But Jaime needs to start doing more push-ups or something in the off-season, because, damn, that dude is like vegan skinny where you don't even do shit. You know, oh, I rode my stationary bike for an hour today. I did hills. That's the type of shit that he looks like he's doing. Do some fucking push-ups. You're supposed to be this great warrior or some shit. I think you're going to be able to swing around a goddamn sword with one hand and be able to properly defend yourself. Hit the gym, buddy. You make that Hollywood money. But the Iron Bank, Mycroft Holmes. I don't even know the character's name. I don't even know if they've ever said his name. But the guy that represents the Iron Bank is he also plays Mycroft Holmes in Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch. He plays Sherlock's brother in it. But pretty much, seriously, Lannister always pays her debts. I'm kind of confused by even the scene. Like, is it even really going to be important in the future? Like, it just seems like an odd, I don't know. Maybe they needed to add an extra couple minutes to the script and Mycroft was available. But yes. Next, we get Jon Snow and Tyrion on the ocean cliffs. If you look really hard in the background, you can see Rey and Luke doing some lightsaber training. if you didn't know, they do a lot of the exterior scenes in Ireland. And that's the same place where they filmed the island scene at the end of Force Awakens. So that cliff scene looked really similar. But that's the first thing that popped in my head. I'm like, oh, somebody should Photoshop in like some... like just Rey running in the background or something. It'd be funny. but yes, Tyrion, Jon Snow. Tyrion's Jon Snow brooding comments about like how good Jon Snow is at brooding. Like that's something that like people make fun of all the time online. And then they actually hear one of the characters make fun of it, Jon Snow, about how Jon Snow does it. It was pretty funny. But yeah, Tyrion kind of coaches Jon Snow on like, hey, psst, dude, I know it sounds crazy to ask what you're asking for, but, and I quote, people's minds aren't made for problems at large. Tyrion. Like, and then Tyrion pretty much breaks down like, hey, she does exactly what she protects people from monsters, just as you do. It's why she came here. And then he goes on to, do you have anything reasonable to ask? And this is why fucking Tyrion's a goddamn all-star. Where like he realizes like, hey, you guys are asking for two extreme things right now. Why don't you ask for this lesser thing, give it a little bit of faith, gain build trust, and then ask for the larger thing. So Tyrion using his little mind, bigly, to solve a problem and to get these two powerhouses, to actually cooperate. But the next scene goes into Tyrion talking to Dany about it. So Tyrion takes his requesters, but Tyrion says this, and I quote, but a wise man once said that you should never believe a thing simply because you want to believe it. Tyrion. Which wise man said this? Dany asked. I don't remember, said Tyrion. Are you trying to present your own statements as ancient wisdom, Dany? I would never do that to you, Tyrion. And then they show this like quick, like quarter second, like edit of like Dany just giving him the side eye, and like she's straight up calling all these fuckers on their like bullshit, on their Westerosi bullshit, of like smooth talking and like trying to win an argument. She did it with Varys last episode, and then this episode she's like, man, you motherfuckers, like, just be more upfront with this shit. Why are you trying to pass some old, like, pass your quote on as to like this old ancient wisdom? Which I thought was funny, and that was another laugh out loud moment. But a lot of laugh out loud moments this episode. But then we get Dany and Jon Snow by themselves on a pathway overlooking the ocean again. And like, I really like this scene too, because it pretty much starts off where like Dany once again has this quote, we all enjoy what we are good at. Dany. Jon Snow, I don't. Just real quick. Like, I know that I'm good at war. I know I have a tactical mind. I'm good at killing people. I don't like it. So, like, Jon Snow does what he needs to do when he thinks that it's right and it's the right thing to do. And, like, just by how simply he carries and conducts himself, like, this is leaving a big impression on Dany, I think, because, like, she realizes what kind of man Jon Snow is. And, I mean, especially comparing him to Khal Drogo, who was this big warrior who talked a lot of shit. Jorah, who was always complimenting her and groveling her at her feet. And then you have what's his nuts? Fucking goddamn it, he's back in Marine. Dario. Then you have Dario, this big braggadocious guy that she takes as a lover, and once again he's groveling at her feet. And then you got motherfucking Jon Snow coming over here, being like, "Listen, I got this problem. I need you to help me solve it." Then he's like, doesn't even want to talk to himself. Davis has to do it for him. He goes and talks to Danny. He doesn't even want to talk about himself with Danny. Like, he's like, I have this problem. I need to figure it out. But Danny relents, says, hey, you'll have my men, anything here, and we'll help you with this dragon gas. And that's when I thought, marriage. Yes. Do I want this aunt to marry her nephew? Yes, I do. I'm saying it right here. We just saw a sister give her brother a blowjob on screen. I think we could do a nephew aunt thing. That sounds really gross now that I said that out loud. Never mind. But it's medieval times. It's a fantasy epic. That's a little bit more detached than the whole Cersei, Jaime thing. So it's a little bit more comfortable, but not that much. We're getting into new, what would that be? Jerry Lewis? Was it Jerry Lewis that married his cousin? Like, he was 18 or something like that, and she was like 15? I think that's what it was. I think she was 15. Or was she 14? I don't think she was 14. I think she was 15. But, yeah, we're getting into that type of territory in real world, and it's like, that's creepy. But fantasy epic, I guess it's a little bit better than brother-sister. not in real life, though. Not in real life. Let's see here. But one thing that I really loved at the end of the scene, you know nothing, Jon Snow. You grit. And this was before Jon became Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. This was before his death and resurrection. This was before he became King of the North. This is before he really knew the threat of Hardhome and the White Walkers and them being able to resurrect the dead instantly. This is before he knew all these things. So essentially, he did know nothing. And Danny, at the end of the scene, says, "You better get to work, Jon Snow." So there's an evolution of this quote. And I paused it and, like, I just had the biggest grin on my face. And I'm like, because it's the perfect callback. It's the same sentence structure with his full last name at the end. And it's such a simplistic sentence, but it just shows the evolution of this character from you know nothing, Jon Snow, to you better get to work, Jon Snow, because you know what the fuck's happening now. You have all the knowledge that you didn't know. So get your ass moving. So I absolutely love that. So hopefully these two will get married. It'd make my soul happy. So now he knows, get to the task. Sansa, next up. They show her thinking logically about food, bringing in food stores from all over the north, having them centered in Winterfell, in case they do need to travel and hurry up to get to Winterfell for protection. They don't have to worry about loading up all the food because the food's already there. They'll return it after the winter if they still have the surpluses. So I like how she's like thinking logically. And then she's walking past as the armorer is making new armor and it's not covered in leather. And winter's coming, you dumb fucks. You silly veil armors. You got to put some goddamn – you got to winterize your fucking – armor, so put some goddamn leather on it. But yes, then we get another there's just so much fantastic writing in this episode. But you get another good monologue by Littlefinger, and it goes, quote, in talking to Sansa and giving her advice, quote, "Don't fight in the north or the south. Fight every battle, everywhere, always, in your mind. Everyone is your enemy. Everyone is your friend. Every possible series of events is happening all at once. Live that way and nothing will surprise you. Everything that happens will be something that you've seen before." End quote. So I think they kind of threw this in as a like double-edged sword, like saying, hey, yeah, you have to constantly be thinking about all these things. You have to constantly be looking at multiple chess boards, multiple moves on that, on each of those chess boards. Like, you have to constantly be thinking. But at the same time, it's also giving the showrunners an excuse for their goddamn fast travel now that they have, where Jamie's able to get from King's Landing to fucking the Tyrells, and the Tyrells should know that the ships aren't coming, so they should have fucking, they should have met in the open goddamn field instead of still being garrisoned at fucking House Tyrell. It makes no goddamn sense. Okay. We haven't gotten there yet. Like I said, this season, dialogue writing has been fantastic. The logistical aspects, the battles, not good so far this season. Probably one of the worst setups this season. Out of any of the seasons, like, just the battle setups are just, like, ridiculous. But yes, then we get the Bran reunion, which I teared up. Bran comes home from Winterfell. You see a quick shot of Mira, which Reed, like, they still haven't introduced Howland Reed, I don't believe, which is her father, and he was at the keep. Like, yeah, they need to have they cast him? I don't know. Because we've gone past the books, like, I'm going to have to recast these for this season because we've gone past the books. Like, I didn't want as many spoilers. Like, I'm weird. Like, if I've read the books, like, I want to know as many spoilers as possible. But if I knew that it's like a new property, so now that we've gone past the books, like, reading the news leading up to each season, I'm like, I'll just look at the headlines, but I won't actually click on the stories to, like, get the details. So, yeah. So Howland Reed, he was at the tower when young Ned last season went up the stairs, entered into the tower after they had that battle at the bottom of it. They entered into the tower, and you find out Jon Snow is really Ned's nephew and Illyria's child. But, yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to be interested to see when they introduce the Howland Reed character and what type of knowledge that he actually imparts. And what, like, because, yeah, I think – I don't know if it's going to be Bran or maybe Howland Reed that actually informs Jon of his heritage. But we shall see. But, yeah, Bran comes in, and I think Bran's doing a goddamn Keanu Reeves impression because he thinks – the kid looks like he's fucking stoned as shit. Like, how much weed is that kid smoking before these scenes? Because he's so fucking spaced out. And then, like, get him a Red Bull or something. Do they ever... Nah, I don't think they have, like, a caffeine agent in Westeros that we've come across. But, yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, I know everything. I know Kung Fu. But let's talk in... Yeah, he has this reunion scene with Sansa, and he's like, let's talk about the beautiful details of the snow falling on the night of your marriage and rake. Like, it's so odd and disconnected. It's like, what the fuck? Like, that was one scene where the writing is like, I really don't understand what you guys are doing here. Maybe once we get the bigger picture of this season and this character's arc, it'll seem a little bit, it'll make a little bit more sense. But right now it just seemed really fucking odd seeing, and it came off as like a super creeper. But next, we go to Jorah in the Citadel and Samwell Tarly, and we get Freddy Krueger body, baby. Jorah's all fucking healed up. Sam, like a motherfucker. Sam's face when Jorah's like, I just started feeling better. I think it might have been the climate. Like, Sam's face, he's like, oh, God, did he just say that? But, yeah, so Jorah and Sam... new couple of BFFs in Westeros, which I'm always happy about, especially when you get two cool characters like that and they get along. I mean, you know they're probably going to meet again, and it's probably going to be kind of like what we had with Tyrion and Dany. So it's going to be kind of one of those situations, hopefully. But, yeah, I like how when the Archmaester actually confronts Samwell, is like, how did you do it? And I was like, and Samwell says, and I quote, I read the books and followed the instructions. Like, as somebody with, like, OCD, and, like, I used to, my first job growing up, I worked at a hardware store, Samba Hardware. but it was kind of like Home Depot. They had like bigger stores, but then they had smaller stores, like local neighborhood places. And I worked at one of those stores, but I would build like the displays for the new grills and stuff like that. So very early on, like I've always had like a technical mind like that, where I'm like, oh, well, there's the goddamn instructions. All you have to do is follow them, and then you'll be able to build it. Like, so with my OCD, like this quote was like one of the perfect things ever. And like, I just absolutely loved it. I read the books and followed the instructions. Fucking beautiful quote. The maester says, that man is alive because of you. You should be proud. And then Sam actually gets a smile from this father figure. I mean, we had Maester Aemon up on the wall, who's kind of like a father figure to Samwell, and he would give them smiles. But like, it's so good to see Sam in these. I don't know. I guess it could be a good argument for like bullying and safe spaces, where like you have this character who's not a strong man. He's very, very much a intellectual. And seeing the mental abuse that he received from his father, and hearing the stories about his father, and then you see these other figures, these other intellectual figures like Maester Aemon, Jorah's father, that was commander of the Night's Watch. He treated Samwell like that. But it's nice seeing that Samwell actually has these, I want to say these safe spaces in quotation marks, these safe spaces that like he's come to find throughout his journey, and it's allowed him to grow to be a better version of the person that he wants to be. Because he knows that he's not a warrior, but he's an intellectual, and he can use his mind to solve things. So it's very cool seeing that. And that he actually is able to gain these father figures and people that he could actually look up to and learn from. But right after that, he's like, now come over here, you're my new fax machine. Pretty much telling them, hey, I need you to replicate these scrolls that are falling apart. So just make copies of them. And then the Archmaester's like, you were expecting a reward? Your reward is not being immediately expelled from the Citadel. Like, get the fuck at work. Ah, God. Like I said, so many, such good dialogue writing in this this episode. But Dany comes across a problem. She's talking about what the fuck to do with Euron's goddamn fleet. And she just wants to burn the motherfucker. We don't need no water. Let the motherfucker burn. But, yeah, then her advisor, I guess that one stray arrow can fuck you up. But, yeah, so they pretty much talk her out of it. And then, once again, we go to the Tyrells, which, why were they still garrisoned? So this is towards this is the last scene of the episode. Fast travel mode unlocked. Jaime was just in fucking, just getting his D S'd by his S, and he was just in King's Landing. He fast travels to goddamn the Tyrells. Which, what the fuck? Like I said, like logistically, like they're just making shit up at this point. Like time, they're just like, they're over here. Never mind that Euron's fleet was able to, because they're going to Dorne, which is west of Dragonstone. So Euron's fleet was able to intercept them from Dragonstone to Dorne. They passed up the fleet that was sailing from Dragonstone to Castle Rock, because Castle Rock's on the western side of Westeros, and King's Landing is on the east side. So they had to, Euron's fleet would have had to have gone past the Unsullied fleet that was going to Castle Rock. Well, somehow Euron's goddamn fleet got all the way to King's Landing, then came all the way back around to fucking attack Unsullied Fleet at Castle Rock, which was abandoned. Like, this shit is making no fucking sense logistically. And they're speeding through it. Like the Castle Rock raid scene is only, what, like 2 or 3 minutes? Like, they're speeding through it purposely so that they're like, yeah, we moved the story forward without really explaining why this happened or how. So, yeah, that's the one thing that's driving me nuts about this season is the fucking the fast travel, the just, oh, all of a sudden we're over here. Oh, we're over here now with our guys that we're supposed to be outnumbered and surrounded, but all of a sudden now we have the advantage. Yeah, what the fuck ever. Making a lot of sense there if you're not thinking. But yes, so next we get fucking Lady Tyrell in the scene made me so fucking happy. Like, God, she's such a good character. I hope if one of the spinoffs, and I saw this, a story yesterday that they're like they should have a Tyrell spinoff of Lady Tyrell when she was young. Bring back Natalie Dormer, who played her granddaughter. Bring back Natalie Dormer to play the young Lady Tyrell. Like, oh my God, she's so smart and she's so. Oh, God. I just love this scene so much. But she has a scene. House Tyrell just fell. Jamie comes into the room, pours 2 glasses of wine, brings him over the table, and then they have this fucking amazing, amazing back and forth. So one of the first things she said, one of the first things Jamie said, there are always lessons in failures. Yes, you must be very wise by now. My father always said I was a slow learner. Like, pretty much just setting up, like, how Jamie, like, he's the dumb one in the family. I just realized that he's the stupid one in the family. Like, he's the dumb brother. Like, Cersei, like, evil and conniving as shit. Tyrion, fucking, probably one of the smartest characters. In this, probably the smartest character. You could argue that he's the smartest character in the series. And then you have Jaime, who like doesn't realize like how he's being used, how Cersei has manipulated him with a little bit of sex. She's still supposed to wed Euron, but now Cersei's just flaunting that she's banging her brother right in front of like servants and stuff. So they're pretty much confirming that Jamie is not the smart one. And I even feel bad for Jamie. Yeah, I'll get into how I feel bad for Jamie, but we'll just work through the scene real quick. Lady Tyrell is like, wasn't that your son's sword? Or wasn't that a Joffrey's sword? And Jamie's like, yes, its name is Widow's Wail. And then Lady Tyrell just comes back. He was like, he really was a cunt, wasn't he? this is once again going back to like the British swearing. Like, she, like the fact that she's like this aristocrat woman talking like that, like, so fucking funny. But I was like, yes, she just called his son that died right in front of his face a fucking cunt, which is hilarious. But God, she's so odd. Like, I want her to be my grandma. And I saw pictures of her when she was young, that actress. She was a goddamn looker when she was young too. So hopefully I'll find me a woman like that someday, because it just make me laugh and be like, man, she's a good fucking shit talker. That's what I want. I want a shit talking woman. because I'm a shit talker. So it'd be nice to have that kind of back and forth. But pretty much Lady Tyrell pretty much says she's very intelligent character. I'd probably put her up there. Maybe it has to be what, Littlefinger, Tyrion, and Lady Tyrell. And I'd put her right up there with Littlefinger, because Lady Tyrell, she knew what the fuck she was doing. I'd probably put her and Tyrion neck to neck as the two most intelligent characters on the show. But she even like deconstructs like what went wrong in terms of what she did. She talks about protecting her family, doing whatever she needed to protect her family. But she says, and I quote, a failure of imagination. She's a monster. You do know that. And then pretty much Jamie comes back with some other garbage, and then she's like, oh, you poor fool. She'll be the end of you. So, and this is where I was talking about early, Pussy has pushed Jamie to the point of no return. Like, that Cersei, I get, and she's the only woman that he's ever been with. I think I remember him saying that in the hot tub scene with Brienne. But yeah, he just hasn't gotten sex that long. Like, there's so much long stretches that he's kind of like Steve Carell's character in 40 Year Old Virgin. He's put the pussy on a pedestal. But yes, like, and it's ensured, and it's another manipulation tactic by Cersei. It's ensured his loyalty. Like, she just has to have sex with him. She has to give him a little bit of blowjob, and then boom, he's not thinking straight again. He's just, oh, it's me and you. It's me and you forever. It's me and you. She's reached the point of her mind-breaking sociopathy. Like, this is not going to end well. And even Lady Tyrell says, like I said, you poor fool, she'll be the end of you. This is not going to end well for Jamie. Jamie is not going to have a happy ending in this series. Cersei's dangled that physical relationship out there again with Jamie. She's got his loyalty. And then she's dangling that marriage proposal out in front of Euron, so she has his loyalty. So we really don't know what fucking Cersei's going to do. She might kill both of them at the end if she were to win the wars, which she's not. But yes, going back to Lady Tyrell, quote, she's a disease. I regret my role in spreading it. You will too. Which, if there wasn't that prophecy for Jaime, that prophecy by the witch for Cersei, saying that she's going to be killed by a younger woman for her, younger, more beautiful queen or whatever, I would say that Jaime might end up killing Cersei, because he might be put in that situation again where the Mad King burned them all, and would Jaime still be able to react in the same manner? Would he still be able to actually kill Cersei if she got to that point where, like, what if there's dragon fire all over King's Landing and she's like, burn it all? Like, would he stop her? Or has he reached a point where there's no return for that character? But Jaime, once again, showing his compassion. And that's why one of these reasons I feel bad for Jaime, man. It's just, he gets so manipulated and, like, his reputation has been shit on so much. We had that amazing scene in the hot tub where he just makes this confession of, like, he killed the Mad King to save lives. Like, he's going to burn down all of King's Landing. And by putting a sword through his back, he saved so many lives. And he confesses it's Bran, and nobody else knows this. Has he ever had this conversation with Cersei? Does Cersei even fucking care? Like, yeah, but once again, Jaime, showing that he's merciful, chose poison when Cersei said that she wanted to, like, flay her and, like, put her head on Lady Tyrell's head on a pike. So there's no pain. Lady Tyrell, like a fucking boss, chugs that shit. Then she goes into her fucking, her swan song monologue. And I quote, I'd hate to die like your son. Clawing at my neck, foam and bile spilling from my mouth, eyes blood red, skin purple. Must have been horrible for you, as a Kingsguard, as a father. It was horrible enough for me. A shocking scene. Not at all what I intended. You see, I had never seen the poison work before. Tell Cersei. I want her to know it was me. End quote. Lady Tyrell, like a fucking boss. Jesus Christ, like, I actually got up and said, yes, like, we just lost this amazing character, but I was so fucking pumped up after that speech. Lady Tyrell, I'm going to say it, she had the biggest dick on this show out of any of the characters. She did not give a fuck. Like, you've seen Cersei question herself. You've seen all these characters question themselves. You've never seen Lady Tyrell question herself because she was a fucking boss. Like, I'm going to miss that character so much, but they did such an amazing job. And I don't like how we got to the point this season where she ended up dying like this. But the way they've developed her character throughout the seasons, and they've used her sparingly, but the way they've developed her character throughout these seasons, I fucking love it. And I'm going to look up her name so that I could actually give her props. Hold on 1 second. So, but yeah, like I said, oh, I'm sorry, and it's Olenna Terrell. They never really used her first name. They always called her Lady. But portrayed by Diana Rigg. Yes. Yeah, portrayed by Diana Rigg. So Diana Rigg, Jesus Christ, one of the best actors on Game of Thrones, delivering some of the best fucking speeches on Game of Thrones, swinging some of the best the best house dick on Game of Thrones, mushroom stamping the shit out of people. My hat's off to you, madam. Love the character. Sad to see it go, but what a fucking swan song. But yeah, holy shit, almost as this recap has been almost as long as the goddamn episode was. So yeah, that's all I got for this week. And fuck, man, this is a good season. I'm loving the dialogue. I'm not loving the fast travel, nonsensical, all of a sudden Cersei's this fucking goddamn military genius figuring out how to overcome her allies. What the fuck ever. I'm loving this dialogue. I'm loving what the other characters are doing outside of King's Landing. But yeah, good season so far. I would have to put it in the good realm just because this episode redeemed itself so much. And really, it was only that last 10 minutes of episode 2 that's really gotten me caught this season where I'm like, what the fuck? That last 10-minute battle scene and then Euron's character. And like I said, there's good and bad to Euron's character with how he's a fucking hilarious shit talker, but at the same time, it's so over the top and shitty 80s metal lead singer douchebaggery when he's actually in battle scenes. So I will be back next week to talk more Game of Thrones episode 4. Well, let me check. Yeah, I don't know how many seasons or how many episodes are in the season. God damn it. I might be depressed after I check. Okay, you guys have a great week.